Considered one of America's most respected political analysts, Jeff Greenfield has spent more than 30 years in network television, including as a commentator on CNN, ABC News, CBS, and currently as an anchor on PBS's Need to Know. A five-time Emmy Award winner, he's a political columnist for Yahoo News and the author of more than a dozen books, including the bestseller Then Everything Changed, Stunning Alternate Histories of American Politics, JFK, RFK, Carter, Ford, Reagan. He is the author of the new ebook 43, When Gore Beat Bush, A Political Fable. It's a great pleasure to welcome Jeff Greenfield to the roundtable. Jeff, good morning. Are you there? No, Jeff is not there. All right, we're going to get Jeff back on the phone in just a second. Jeff Greenfield's new book is 43, When Gore Beat Bush, A Political Fable. It is a book that is being put out as a ebook. It's about an 83-page read and is being called A Political Fable. You can find out more information about it by going to byliner.com, B-Y-L-I-N-E-R, byliner.com, to find out more information about the book. As I mentioned, this book is an alternate history, as was his last book, Then Everything Changed, Stunning Alternate Histories of American Politics, JFK, RFK, Carter, Ford, and Reagan. And once again, we'll try it again. It's a great pleasure to welcome Jeff Greenfield to the program. Jeff, thank you very much for being with us.
I am here. This late 19th century technology proved very tricky for me.
It's always good to have you on the show. This is a fascinating story. Before we talk about it specifically, let us talk about, because I think the last time you were on was talking about Then Everything Changed. What is it that draws you to this alternate history of thinking about things and how they could have been different?
I can actually date this for you. It was election afternoon of 1980. I was then working for CBS. And a producer called with this rumor that Reagan had had a stroke, which, you know, luckily, fortunately, turned out not to be true. And I started to think, what would happen if, you know, the night of an election, we cast all these votes, and then the president is somehow disabled? And a short 15 years later, that resulted in a novel called The People's Choice, where I speculated about a winning presidential candidate dying right after the election. And then I actually started thinking about all of the near what-ifs that dot. It's American history, it's actually world history. How Franklin Roosevelt was almost assassinated in Florida before he ever got to be president. And then I learned that John Kennedy had almost died in Palm Beach at the hands of a suicide bomber, an all but forgotten moment in history. And the more I thought about this, the more I realized that you could apply a butterfly effect. And when I did the book, the one scenario a lot of people wanted... Sorry?
No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, the one scenario everybody was interested in was Gore Bush, and so I took that one on with the result that it is now an ebook.
It's a fascinating thing because you think about the possibility, and I could see why it would be something that people would ask you about almost constantly, because it really could have gone either way, and that is where. That is where this political fable, as you call it, begins with the possibility. But even in your story, it's still very close, and there is a phone call, and then it's taken back.
Well, I, a lot of what I do in these things on the lighter side is just to throw a wink and a nod, right?
Yeah.
I have Bush withdrawing his concession and Gore getting to, instead of saying, you know, what? And Bush says, well, get that burr out of your saddle,
right?
You know, which is how I think he might have talked. But the trick to these things for me always is plausibility. I don't do the kind of alternate history where, you know, Hitler invents the laser beam. The political scenarios all start with things that almost did happen. And in this case, and I'll give this away, I mean, you know, they can spend the $1.99 on the ebook even after this. The reason Gore wins has nothing to do with a recount. It's because Ilian Gonzalez's mother does not drown. And so there was no outrage in the Cuban-American community about that custody fight, and by many estimates, that cost Gore about maybe 50,000 votes. That's how I get him into the White House. Not a recount, not a hanging Chad, nothing.
Right.
Just this slight change in history.
The other slight change in history, which I find interesting, is because, well, I don't even know if this is that slight of a change of history, is that what we've learned since then is that there was a great deal of friction between the vice president and the president, Vice President Gore and President Clinton, and you really start off with that as kind of the feel of the White House, even though this was a very tumultuous second term for President Clinton, that Gore won, assuming that as it really happened, he did not embrace the president in any way, shape, and form. So it was chilly between the two sides, and you kind of kick off with that.
Yeah, well, the fact is that after the election, there was this one-on-one meeting with Gore and Clinton that aides to both of them later recounted, where Gore basically, you know, said, "Your behavior had a lot to do with me losing," and Clinton basically saying, "How come you couldn't figure out a way to distinguish my personal behavior with the fact that the economy was as good as it's ever been?" So yes, that one rests in what I think is plausibility, and indeed, the notion of a President Gore having a lot of trouble with the Congress, I think that's one that I interviewed people on both sides about, and there's no question in my mind that not only would the Republicans who controlled the House have been very resistant, just because they did not want to see a third Democratic term president succeed, but a lot of more liberal Democrats would have said to President Gore, "Hey, we got all this money. Remember, Joe, the big controversy in 2000? What were we going to do with all the extra money?"
Right.
And Gore, I am told by a couple of people who were very close to him, was determined, had he been president, to pursue a course that was a little more centrist, or maybe substantially more centrist, you know, to prove that he wasn't a big government liberal. So I propose in this book that there is tension from the get-go with President Gore and his own allies in Congress, and you do have that sniping between him and Clinton, which was a fact in real life.
You know, one of the things that I like about the book, and because it reminds you, even though it is an alternate history, it does remind you of where you were at certain points, and where we were as a nation, and as a really, you know, a global political situation, and so I found it fascinating, and again, caution not to give too much away here, but just safe to say that it's very, very early in your story, very early in the story, that we hear of Osama bin Laden, and that quote-unquote problem is taken care of relatively soon.
Well, again, here's a case where, you know, I combine reporting, because it's what I do,
right,
with what I think is plausible speculation that you are entitled to disagree with, but I do think it's clear that Al Gore would have been much more attentive to al-Qaeda from the beginning. Remember, he'd been there for 8 years.
Right.
He was on the National Security Council. He was pretty hawkish about many things, contrary to the image of I guess, any Democrat, although maybe Obama's taken care of that one. And I did talk to Richard Clark, who headed the Counterterrorism Security Group, not to give me a plot. This is all on me, whether it's, you know, for good or ill, but just to get a sense of how things were. And so the notion that Al Gore would have gone after al-Qaeda more intensely, I think, is rooted in the fact that the Bush people, when they in fact did come back in 2001, they've been out of power for 8 years, and they missed the entire rise of al-Qaeda. You know, for them, it was still a nation-state issue. They were still looking at Saddam Hussein as the hidden hand behind virtually everything, including the Oklahoma City bombing, according to, you know, at one level. So, yeah, I do suggest that Gore would have been more attentive. Now, I'm going to let people invest the $1.99 to find out how I deal with 9/11, because that would be giving a lot of it away. But I can say that, you know, however earnest a president is about an issue, there is a bureaucracy in Washington that is very, very tough to move.
And I have to say, when I initially picked up the book, I said to myself, oh, this will be fascinating to read. I wonder if Al and Tipper will be married at the end.
I didn't take it that.
I'm sorry?
I said I didn't take it that far.
No, but I was curious as to, it brings up the question, which is, how much do you rely on what has happened since, or do you rely on just what we know as fact up until that point?
No, there's some sense of knowing, you know, where we got. It helps you look back. That's why the time frame of these things tends to be far enough away so we can see how history really developed. So I don't think I could do a what-if Obama presidency, but close enough so that I can actually interview people. I mean, there's a great what-if about the 1916 Wilson Hughes campaign, but I tell you, getting the interviews with those people would be a little tricky. So in this case, it's knowing what happened informs me of how the political dynamic was. I mean, there's always an argument, you know, is history shaped by great leaders, by great movements, or in my case, I would add a lot, by sheer random chance. So that's where you can see the hinge, these, you know, I guess hinge points that just take a very different course. You know Philip K. Dick, the science fiction
sure.
writer?
Yeah.
He wrote a book called The Man in the High Castle in 1962, set that year, and posits a Nazi-Japanese victory in World War II. And you only 100 pages into the book do you see that the reason he posits that is that Roosevelt was shot and killed in Miami by Giuseppe Zangara, and so we didn't have him leading America through that difficult time. That's the sort of distance that I think... helps.
Jeff Greenfield is our guest. The name of the book is 43 with an asterisk, When Gore Beat Bush, a Political Fable, and you can find out more by going to byliner.com, and it's available for all the various platforms, whether you have a Kindle or a,
right.
an iPhone,
Nook, your Twitter,
iPad, anything.
You know, anything. it'll show up, you know. It's really been an interesting excursion into this world, because my books have all come out from publishers, and I'll be doing that again. But realizing that you finish editing a piece on Friday and it's up for sale on the next Tuesday,
yeah,
you go, whoa, we're not in Kansas anymore.
Kind of nice, you know. I have to ask you this, because an hour ago I was getting ready for the show and I was listening to Marketplace, and they were interviewing someone from the Gallup organization, and they were giving the numbers, and they were basically saying that you look at the political race right now, and it seems as though Obama is now starting to run away with it, and that the guy from Gallup said, you know, if he was a betting man, he would bet that this is Obama's to lose. I don't know. I kind of shuddered at that. As a longtime political commentator, what do you make of such comments? Realizing that, as you say, history can change on a dime.
Yeah, or a plugged nickel. First of all, I am absolutely fascinated, as Newt Gingrich often says, now that I am in the Twitter world and follow, you know, a lot of journalists and advocates, the obsession with the polling, not just the poll numbers, but how they do it. You know, there are these fights that are now going on. You know, they're oversampling Democrats. No, you're just a sore loser. You know, look what Rasmussen says. But Rasmussen is too Republican. There are two numbers that just popped yesterday and today that tell me that one ought to be very, very cautious. One is that the second quarter growth rate was revised downward sharply to 1.3%. That's a really anemic number.
Yeah.
And the second number is we're going to hit a trillion dollar deficit again. I think any incumbent president running for re-election in the face of those numbers, whatever the reason, whoever you want to blame, is not in a position to be saying 6 weeks out, this thing is over. I mean, it is certainly true that the direction of the election has moved in the president's favor, and that Mitt Romney has some serious liabilities as a candidate, and that the demographics tilt toward the Democrats. I just look at those two numbers and think, why does anybody want to go out on a limb and say he or she knows what's going to happen when these numbers still, I think, are dangerous for the president, not to mention what you raised, the black swan, you know, the appearance of some unanticipated event that can turn the whole election upside down. I mean, 4 years ago, Lehman, at this point, I think Lehman Brothers had just collapsed, which changed the whole arc of the election, or at least made it very different than where we thought it was. So I'm with you. I just, you know, if you just want to go probabilities, sure. Beyond that, it is tilting in Obama's favor. Beyond that, you know, this is above our pay grade.
Also, as someone, though, that has been watching this for a long time, and I, again, why I have admired your work and have enjoyed your work for years is because, I guess having first watched you on CBS Sunday Morning, is that you look at something like this and you say, you know, how do we learn from our mistakes? What do we do? And you think that for all of our talk about the parties and their power and what they do and how strong they are and how much money they have and how much money is being spent on the race, of how dumb you can be at sometimes. You know, it just seems it just watching the I mean, I don't. Regardless of who you're voting for or who you're interested in, I think you have to look at the Romney campaign and say, "Wow, they've made some really serious mistakes that just seem dumb."
But here's, I don't disagree with that. Although I will say one of my favorite quotes about what you just said comes from President Kennedy a couple of months into his term, and there was a Time magazine article that described his aides as coruscatingly brilliant. And Kennedy is supposed to have said 10,000 votes in Illinois the other way, and we'd all be coruscatingly stupid.
Right.
So, you know, there is this, you know, and he also once said victory has 1,000 fathers and defeat is an orphan. But in fact, victory has 1,000 fathers and bad campaigns have 1,000 kibitzers. You know, I just tweeted that I want an app to block the 500 pieces I will be inundated with. What Mitt must do, how Mitt can turn this around. What should he do in the debate? And the point I'm getting at, perhaps too slowly, Joe, is Mitt Romney had a fundamental problem, which is he could not win the Republican nomination by running as who he really was. And you see this every so often. It just yesterday, he was bragging about, appropriately, about insuring everybody in Massachusetts, you know. But he couldn't run with that because he used an individual mandate, which in the Republican base is absolutely unacceptable. And he's been struggling, I believe, actually for 6 years, from the time he first decided to run, with how do you combine the governor that he was with the kind of candidate that the Republican primary base will nominate. And much of his dilemma stems from the fact that I think he is absolutely unable to argue what he really wants to argue.
And it seems in doing that, the president ultimately, while running a campaign, gets to just sort of be very low-key and just try not to screw it up.
Well, you actually are channeling an old aphorism, so old I can't remember who said it. Never interfere with your opponent when he is in the process of destroying himself.
Right.
But I keep coming back to this point that you know there's plenty of things about Obama's position that left him, and I think may still leave him vulnerable. Not the least of which, as I said, are the bad economic numbers. But if you ask the question of an incumbent, you know, I'm not really happy with what's happened so far. So how's your second term going to be different from your first? He has not provided anything like an answer to that question,
absolutely,
except in the most vague terms.
Right.
So, and the other part that happens here is that, and this is kind of typical, is you're finding some Republicans, some conservatives saying, we should have nominated X, Jeb Bush, Mitch Daniels. But the fact is that they had a chance to run. And they didn't, for personal reasons or political reasons. And again, to quote Donald Rumsfeld, you go into a campaign with the candidate you have, not the candidate you might want. And I do think that, you know, the party has trapped itself in a way, because the most ardent supporters of the Republican Party, the ones who vote in primaries and are the foot soldiers, have developed a particular kind of politics that makes it very difficult to then pivot and turn to the middle. And I think should Romney lose, one of the more fascinating things we're going to see is the kind of fight within the party between somebody like Jeb Bush or Mitch Daniels, who is saying, we've got to open this tent wider. You know, we're getting slaughtered politically with the demographics. Hispanics are voting against us 2.5 to 1, and many of their values are ours because we've told them that we don't want them here. And the folks who are going to say, nope, we lost with another moderate. Just like Dole and McCain, we nominated a rhino. Next time we have to nominate a genuine conservative, whether that's Paul Ryan or Rand Paul, I can't begin to speculate. And this is what happens. I mean, one of the questions is, after the Democrats lost all those elections in the 80s, they turned toward a guy like Bill Clinton, who told the party they were wrong on a lot of stuff, on welfare, free trade, crime. Is there that kind of Republican who can say to the party's base, we're not speaking to the country? This all is premised on a Romney defeat, which, you know, if it doesn't happen, that's a whole different conversation.
Well, Jeff Greenfield, it's always great to talk to you. I was lucky enough to, when I got this, I just devoured the book. It's fun to read. It's a quick read, and it's really a lot of fun. It's called 43 When Gore Beat Bush, A Political Fable, and you can find out more by going to byliner.com, B-Y-L-I-N-E-R, byliner.com. Jeff Greenfield, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much, as always, and we look forward to talking to you soon.
My pleasure. Sorry for not making the phone work.
No problem. Thank you very much. Great to have you aboard. Thank you. Again, the name of the book, 43, When Gore Beat Bush, A Political Fable, byliner.com. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.